This is another in a series of interviews with early Mill Valley residents made under the auspices of the Mill Valley Library Association. Ruth White Bowie was born May 13, 1888 in San Francisco and has been a resident of Mill Valley since 1904. In 1910, she married Ralston White, and the Garden of Allah, their home, was completed in 1915. This interview, made in November 1969, took place at the Garden of Allah.
Ralston's father, for the reason that he was instrumental in opening up Mill Valley with so many of those early ones. I can remember all the names, but they all date very back to the 90s, you see. Mm-hmm. But you see, Mr. Lovell White was a great banker. He was president and cashier of the San Francisco Savings Union for 40 years, and his only son, Ralston White, he wanted him to be a banker. But my husband was not that way. He loved the outdoors. He was very romantic, and he just loved to be outdoors and enjoy beauty. So unfortunately, he worked at the bank, and that's where he memorized the Omar Khayyam's Ruby art. He was so fast and ahead of everybody else that he'd finish his work and then he'd memorize 105 stanzas of the Rubaiyat, which he kept reciting to me all the time. But he had no taste for it, you see. So unfortunately, he had to disappoint his father when he finished college and everything by saying that he just couldn't face a banker's life all his life. He just had to do something else. So he went around the world. He earned $1,800, and he traveled 18 months around the world for $1,800. But he did come back steerage from Japan. His money gave out, and he came back steerage from Japan. But he was such a nice-looking young man. I mean, the captain had him for meals with him every day, but he slept steerage, and he got home. And so he and his father were a little estranged on account of the disappointment. But the 18 month separation, you know, that just did the trick. And when Ralston got home, Mr. Lovell White was so glad to see him. He said, "All right, you can start at the bottom at the Town of House Land Water Company in Mill Valley, and that'll be your future." And so that's how it started. And it was when he was surveying, actually, and over the country that he discovered this spot. He was reading Robert Hitchens' book, The Garden of Allah.
I wondered where the name came from.
He was reading Robert Hitchens' book, and he loved it. Very romantic again. It's a very romantic tale. I read it aloud to Rob, and he read it. And he said that when he was surveying up here, he said, I just took a deep breath, and I said to myself, oh, this is my Garden of Allah. He just fell in love with the spot. That's how he got his name. So, and everything about it, that's the reason I saw to it that the name should always be perpetuated. We first lived at the Garden of Allah. We drove back and forth with a team of black paces.
To San Francisco?
No, just from here down to the station.
Oh, I see.
But these black paces were, they were some horses. They were very, very costly team that we had. And the mountain railroad was running in those days, and every time we passed the mountain railroad, they stood right up like that, reared right straight up, and then they'd go down, but they were just so frightened, you know, they'd rear up, and then they'd come. That's the type of horses they were. They were just wonderful.
They were beautiful, aren't they?
Then, here's the beginnings. See, there's the mountain railroad.
Yes.
See, and that's where all the material was brought up, on the mountain railroad. There's a slide up near there, I think I have a picture of it somewhere, where from the railroad track down to the road, it came down this slide and was hauled from up there down to this site for the building of the place. This is the old barracking home. My father was a homeopathic doctor for 50 years in San Francisco.
Is this on Van Ness?
Washington, and right near Van Ness. Washington and Venice.
I see.
What was your father's name?
Berrickey, Dr. Berrickey, Dr. William Berrickey. And that's his picture. And then two of my brothers were homeopathic doctors, too, but they both had passed away. And five brothers, only one brother's left, one brother left, wow. And my twin sister. And then we, of course, Mr. White was so fond of hunting and fishing and all outdoors that we went in rather heavily for dogs and things when we first lived at the Garden of Allah. And when we lived in that little cottage up around the bend there. See, this is the barn area up there. It's very changed now. But this was the barn. He had a lot of horses because we each had a riding horse and the team of black pacers and a workhorse and everything. And so we lived up there while... yes, we had a cow. I don't know what the messy sakes are. We had all those things in the early days.
When did you first... when was the Garden of Allah built?
It was finished in 1915 for the Panama Pacific Exposition when it opened. But it was over 2 years being built. It was started and started about in 1912 and 13. But it took 2 years to build because it's steel and concrete and had to come up by the railroad, you know. It was mostly hand labor in those days. And so it took a long time. But we lived in that little cottage up around the bend there while it was being built. It was very cozy and comfortable. But now that cottage is used for the manor to live. And, you know, a good many people have lived there over the years. But when it was new and while the place was being built, we occupied it. And yes. Now here's the very beginning of the, here's part of the slide. There's the slide. You see the railroad brought it to there, right to that point, mm-hmm. and slid down there, and then was drawn by horses. And here's the knoll, right there, right at the very beginning. There's the slide,
mm-hmm.
and all that. It's it grew gradually. But I can't get over the old-fashioned cars. It is a wonder we. I'll skip some of this. Yes, it is all across a lot of family pictures. But I see this is the beginning when the steel and concrete. See, there's the steel structure.
This must have been quite advanced.
Oh, it certainly was.
In those
and
days.
As they speak in that article that I've given you, that it was the first probably type of house of its kind in Marin County at that time.
I'm sure it must be.
And so many people. When they see these pictures, you know, they said, oh, my goodness, did you ever need that much steel? I think they used much more steel than they needed, but it certainly stood well.
It will stand forever.
Stand forever. It's very good.
Well.
And, of course, that's what makes it so valuable for the church or anybody. And in the University of California, they telephoned me. They were so anxious to get after I'd made it my husband's memorial. And they offered me some breathtaking prize. And I said, oh, it's a permanent memorial to my husband. And they said, you wouldn't be interested in that, $400,000? I said, no, I wouldn't be interested. I said, it's a permanent memorial. And they said, well, we need practically a Class A house, yours is Class B, and for our scientific work, and we want it near the University of California. So they were really disappointed in all that, but I wasn't going to change the memorial. And see, now this is all that shows the construction of it. And it's going up. So you have to pour the concrete in.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
It really was. No wonder it took over 2 years to build.
Yeah.
When you think it's
beginning to take shape.
Yeah. And, these are.
And now it's so surrounded by greenery, it's hard to believe.
You know, so many people, not so many, but some people, when they come up to it, have said to me, oh, this is simply beautiful. They said, well, certainly, if you hadn't called it the Garden of Allah, you should have called it Shangri-La, because on account of being so kind of cozy and surrounded by the growth. Oh, the growth over the years is really amazing. Oh, these are just all different pictures. And, but you see, it was very bare when the house was finished. It was very bare. And that's the beginning of the swimming pool. And but of course we had this perfectly fabulous finished garden. him. He took care of it for 45 years.
And he's responsible for all the citrus and everything.
White, of course, Mr. White was an outdoor person too, and so he and the Finnish gardener talked everything over and planned everything. Of course, Rolfson didn't actually do so much of the work, but I mean, he landscaped and talked it over and gave directions and all that. But
what was the gardener's name?
Alphonse Harper. And he's a wonderful person. He's still alive, but he's 78 years old now and he has heart trouble, so he can't do it. Anyway, the place became so run down that they neglected the garden so many things. I'm not criticizing because I know times have changed. It's very difficult. But anyway, it got so run down that Alphonse, he just wouldn't come. He used to come regularly. He said, oh, Mrs. Bowie, he said, anytime you'd need me, I'd come, but otherwise, I don't care to come to the garden of Ella. He said, makes my heart sore. And he couldn't bear to see the neglect of the garden, you know. Of course, a lot of people still think it's beautiful, but those of us who knew how it did look, you see, that's the point. So many people said to me, well, of course, you remember it always at its best, but it still looks attractive to strangers. And I guess that's true. Oh, yeah. So well, that's about, I can't take too much time over the hour, but those are, oh, and this is the swimming pool, of course. Swimming pools holds 350,000 gallons of water.
Is it below the house, oh, yes, or is it this direction?
No, it's down here in the canyon. It's down in the canyon, right down here. And
Yes.
And we can, could go down, but it's rather pathetic to see it now because there's no water in it and they haven't kept it up. And it was so beautiful, as you can see here, what a beautiful pool it was under Alphonse's marvelous care.
Yeah.
And I swam in that pool for 50 years. 50 years. Yeah, 50 years. And the temperature was never warmer than about, I think it perhaps the warmest was 60.
I would imagine so.
60. Well, most of the time it's even cooler. I used to start swimming early. But I love cold water and still do, but my husband won't let me go swimming anymore. In such cold water, you know. But I still take my cold shower and do that. And that's Rawson, ready to play baseball. You know, he really started baseball in Mill Valley with all the young boys. You know, he was so crazy about baseball, so he helped them and taught them and directed them and everything. There he is there. One of the first things he ever taught me was to keep score in baseball. He said, "Ruthie, you'll never enjoy baseball until you keep score." So we did a lot of that.
We occasionally hike through your baseball diamond.
Oh, you do?
You know,
up the hill there, yes.
Oh, what a marvelous site that is. Now, who owns this property? Is that part of the church property?
It runs right up to almost the Mountain Railroad track.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold a little piece of it. Some young couple, just with tears in their eyes, came and asked me to, they could buy a little piece. They wanted a home. And so I consented, although I kind of was reluctant about it. I didn't like to cut it up, but anyway, I did. And they paid me only $500. And within a year, they sold it for $5,000. And since then, they put it on, put a home there. And, of course, the house adds the value. And I believe it, I don't know whether it's been sold or they're asking $35,000. So, but they were just, they're going to live there forever and so forth. Although it doesn't matter. But anyway, just one of those things. You know.
So I think that baseball diamond
that was wonderful. Of course, Mr. White used to have his American Legion and his Rotarians and the bank. They all came over and played baseball. But you see, Mr. White was so smart that he realized that he could not develop this place without our own water supply. That was essential, because you can imagine a place like this, there'd be leaking faucets and all, everything like that, and that would be terrific if you were buying town water. So Mr. White wanted to acquire a water right, and we had an expensive system, and sort of a tank or dam or something down below, and then a pump. It pumped it up to the ball field, see, and then it came down by gravity, the water, see. But that was expensive and troublesome, and we needed water. But because we had that system, why, Mr. White was able to buy a water right that belonged to the big place, mm-hmm. where this old golden Irish yew, it was a water right. And he was able to buy that way back in 1913 for $18,000, which was a good deal of money in those days, but that water right today would be about $180,000 if it was for sale at all. That's the difference in the values now, mm-hmm. you know. But anyway, Mr. White bought it for $18,000, so the Garden of Allen has always had its own water supply and its gravity, you see. So and so this was the bridge that went across right outside here, went across the canyon there, and the road underneath that goes down to the swimming pool, see. Mm. And Alphonse, this wonderful gardener, built that bridge, and he never did anything but walk or run around this place. He lived up in the cottage, you see, mm-hmm. where we first lived, and he always went back and forth and back and forth, and he built this bridge. He never thought of driving in a car, but I can assure you, everybody now who lives up there, they bring their car down to the kitchen door and they drive back and forth. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. Alphonse was a European, but raised in Finland until he came over here. He was about 20 when he came. And the Europeans have a different background, a very different background. They're used to less luxury, wonderful tennis court. Again, Alphonse took perfect care of a shell mound, Indian shell mound, and Alphonse kept it. And Helen Wills and Tilden and all the champions played on that. Oh, wow. There was only one other court in all the Mill Valley that was full size. So we had a full size court, and so they loved to come here and play. And the tennis court's over there on the other side, and of course, we always had big buffet luncheons and everything for them up on the terrace, and the tennis court was really a most beautiful thing.
Where on earth did you get the shell?
Well, they over there by Alto. You see, in those days
they went over and got it themselves.
Yes, huh? Alphonse went over in his truck, and he brought the shell mound, mm-hmm. and then he took such perfect care of it. You see, there was a full size court and everywhere. Some of the groups do.
I would like to ask you about the 1929 fire.
Oh, yes. Oh,
where it started and how far
down
it
came. That's an interesting tale. As a matter of fact, my sister, Mr. White was down at his office at the Town of Fires Lane and Water Company. My sister, who came out every summer with her three children and spent the summer with us, and she was here with her children, and Alphonse saw. See, the Mount Railroad ran in those days, and somebody flicked a cigarette, and that started right up here. And so gradually it took fire, and Alphonse saw this little smoke starting above the railroad track on the mountain, and he came down and said to my sister, "There's a fire starting. You better report it to the fire department." Of course, my sister called the fire department right up. It just galloped, you know, it simply galloped. It was so dry in July, it was terribly dry, and it came galloping over this hill, and I was in Santa Fe, and when I came back and wanted to drive up here, they stopped me. They said, "Oh, Mrs. White, you can't go up to the Garden of Allen." And I said, "Oh, but it's my home, I want to get there." "Oh," they said, "that's gone long ago." It's saying a thing like that. And I didn't get up to it, but my sister and her children, they had already left, and Mr. White had come up from his office when he heard about the fire, and so he was here, and he and Alphonse and the fire department, such as it was. But you see, the reason why that fire spread so much was because the hydrants were not standard, you see, and so they didn't fit. The city fire department came over, and fire departments from all over, but they were not standard, so they couldn't turn on the water. That's the reason it spread. So 111 homes burned, and this middle ridge was almost all burned, and my father and mother's home burned. That was over on Tamapais, and that burned, and so many places. Well, 111 homes, mm-hmm. but strangely, the Lovell White place, the parents of Ralston White, their place was on McGee, And that did not go.
This is the arches.
The arches.
Mm-hmm.
That's in that Here Now book of
I noticed yeah. that.
Yeah. Yeah. That did not
Well,
come.
How close to you to the house here did the fire come?
Well, it came right straight down, burnt our garage, burnt all the pasture, burnt the barn, did everything. But strangely, it swept over the hill. You see, there is a little canyon here, and there were firefighters that came up, and it swept over the hill. And of course, this house couldn't burn. Immediately, all the windows were closed, and it couldn't burn because it's a Class B house. It could be gutted. If a fire started on the inside, yeah. it could be gutted because it's wooden inside. That's the reason it's a Class B house. But it could never burn from the outside. And so if any sparks or anything did blow up this way, it was harmless, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But our garage burned, and the little barn up at the ball field we were speaking about, you know.
Oh, it went through there.
Oh, yes, it went right over the ball
mm-hmm.
field.
Well, not down into the canyon here itself.
No, it didn't. You know, the redwood trees are not combustible, strangely. And so when it came swept down over the mountain, the redwood trees, it galloped over the redwood trees. None mm-hmm. of the redwood trees burned. They're not a combustible tree. And it did not go below the house. It swept down from the canyon. As I say, it took our barn and the shed and the garage and all that. It swept over the hill and took in all the houses on Ralston Abbey on that part, swept all of that, and then went my father and mother's house burned over
That's
the
where
Tamil
Pious Larry
Summit.
Finn
That's
is
right.
now.
That's right.
Isn't it?
And that was
yes.
burned to the ground. Well,
what was the Garden of Allah like during the Flapper area just after World War One?
I don't remember so many flappers ever. Those were much better days, weren't they?
Just wondering what sort of life you were living here.
Well, of course, in those days, after the war, in the 20s, as they always call them, the golden 20s, you know, why there was a great deal of affluence in the country then, because the country was very prosperous at that time. And up to 1929, when the crash came, and we just had open house and did a lot of entertaining, and my sister and her family came out every summer, and my father and mother were both alive, and we just led what you might call a typical, I don't like to exactly use this expression, but it was kind of like a society life where you did a lot of entertaining and had friends and open house, and of course in those days we had the means, and everybody had servants in those days, and we had four, really. We had a cook and a second maid, and then Alphonse, and then he had an assistant in the summer that helped him a little bit. So, they all ate here. I mean, I was the head of the house, and I had to provide do all the catering and all that, and provide the meals for them, So it was a busy life in an entirely different way, you know. But actually, since I've been doing my own work, when I think of how scared I used to be of my maids and so afraid they'd announce their departure when I had a big dinner party or anything, I was scared stiff. And now, since I've been doing my own work, I consider myself very efficient and can do it very easily. I can't imagine being scared of them. If I went back to those days, if they demurred over a party and everything, I think I'd say to them, "Here's the door."
How many bedroom suites do you have upstairs?
Oh, there are only five bedrooms.
But each one, as I remember it, each one had its own sitting room and its own balcony.
But each has
its
own
bath.
Well, not own bed. You see, there are four beds in the house altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And But each bedroom has a balcony, that was
yes.
true. And then, of course, we had a large gymnasium. Mr. White was so crazy about athletics and everything. He had his rowing machine and everything else. And then he was very fond of hunting and fishing. So the gymnasium was kind of his special section where we had a ping pong table. And he and I were great ping pong players when we came back from Europe after living over there 7 years. We came back on a freighter, and believe me, we were the champions of the freighter. we really played ping pong. But the gymnasium, that's the conference room now. The church has changed the turned the gymnasium into a conference room.
Is this on the second floor?
Yes, on the second floor. They should actually have shown it to you. And they made it very comfortable when it was our gymnasium. It didn't have heat because, of course, it was just for that purpose, you know, for exercising and things like that. The church put in heat, and they've kind of changed the gymnasium a good deal. It's a very lovely conference room now. In those early days, I used to have a dressmaker come and stay a week at a time, and I had a special sewing room and everything for sewing, you know.
Well, that really was a different life.
Oh, it wasn't life. They have got an unusual flavor. I like them.
Well, what did downtown Mill Valley look like?
Oh, it's a fascinating place that ever was, horse and buggy days.
There was a big depot where the trains came in.
It was a depot, and of course I date right back to the trains, when the steam trains used to come in, and then the electric trains followed, you see. We used to race the train up on horseback, because we all rode horses, and we used to go down to Millwood. The first station was Millwood, you know. That doesn't exist anymore. It's Locust Avenue, and then goes on down. But Millwood was about a mile down the from Mill Valley, and had a station there and everything. And we used to line up, and we all rode horseback. And being a steam train, of course, when it started off, it took a little minute or two to get going, so it gave us riders a chance to really get a little ahead. And we used to race the train into Mill Valley. That was in the days of the horseback days. And the Mill Valley Depot was just a wooden depot, and everybody down there with their horses and buggies. And the Blithedale Hotel had a four in hand. It came down and swung around a tree, you know, and with this four in hand horses, and the guests got in. And then Kenilworth Inn had its own one, and the Woodside Inn, those were the three hotels. And all the private families, they all went down the 5:15 when it got in. That was the popular train. And everybody's, you just couldn't hardly get through the grove down there around there where the train landed. It was so full of horses and buggies and horseback riders and everything. Oh, they were such fascinating days. And then on Sundays, an awful lot of hikers came over, and they started walking up the mountain and started right there from the station, climbed up the mountain, up Summit Avenue, and right on up the mountain. And Dowd Stable, of course, was in operation then. And Irving Dowd died 2 or 3 years ago. He ran that stable for many, many years. And then there were a few stores, you know, but it was just a fascinating country town. So, and the Old Mill School, that dates way back. We went to the Old Mill School. And but of course, a good many years before they had built the high school. And and then the Dipsy Race, that dates way, way back, you know, where they ran that Dipsy Race.
Did you live in Mill Valley before you were married?
Oh, yes, the Barrickie family, my father.
Oh, well, then when did you first come here?
Well, we came here, I think it was about 1904. The big earthquake and fire was 1906, see, and my father was a very, very busy doctor, and they had seven children, father and mother had seven children. And we had a place up in the Sierras, see, up in Placerville, up in the Sierras. But my mother was up there, of course, she had a nurse and everything, she was up there. But somebody kind of scared my father, I think, about having his wife and six or seven children up there in the mountains. And so they decided then to build in this home in Mill Valley where Larry Sims lives.
And this was on Tamalpais?
Yes,
on
Tamalpais Avenue. Okay. And they built there, and the minister of our Swedenborgian church, Mr. Worcester, was the one. Of course, we were all baptized Swedenborgian, you see, and my father was very close with the minister. And it was Mr. Worcester that said to my father, "Oh, come over to Mill Valley, I'll show you where to build for your family." And so that's how it started, and my father bought this lot and built this home, and we came over as a family about 1904 or 5 along there. And at the time of the fire and earthquake, my father and my twin sister and I were in Europe, We went to school in Dresden one winter, and my father came over to bring us back. And before we went back, we went on a trip to Spain and southern France, and we happened to be in Naples when the fire and earthquake happened. And as you all know or heard about, there was an eruption of Mount Vesuvius at the same time. You see, Vesuvius is right under San Francisco. And so whatever happened, happened at both ends, you see. And I never will forget the headlines in the Naples paper came out and said, San Francisco wiped off the map. So then, of course, we were very naturally worried about my brother, my mother, and my five brothers, you see. And so we cabled, of course, Father did. It took 3 days to get a reply. But it just so happened, my mother said that they had just moved to Mill Valley. They had a summer place, you see. Our place was just... Mill Valley was only a summer place in those days. There were practically no all-year-round residents. Maybe a handful, you might say. But it was a summer place, strictly. And everybody came over for the summer. And so the Bericke family came over. And Mother just happened to have moved over, you see, the first part of April, which was fortunate, so they actually weren't in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. But the Bericke home, built by Willis Polk, too, was set for dynamiting. It was set for dynamite, but they didn't dynamite because the fire didn't cross Van Ness Avenue. It was stopped, apparently, at Van Ness Avenue. And we were just across Van Ness Avenue on Washington Street.
You're in the first block there.
First block
on
Washington. Between Van Ness and Franklin.
I'm quite sure I know where the house
is. Yes, Willis Polk built the house, and it's torn down now, of course.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yes, I think there's a whatever it is there.
Hippopotamus hamburger stand.
Something like that. Anyway, what a shame to have torn down Willis Polk's house in San Francisco. That was really a shame. This is Jane's oldest, too. He built her home. It was torn down. And so we came over every summer.
And you went to school at Old Mill School?
Well, yes, it wasn't called Old Mill School then, I don't think. It was called
Summit School.
Yes, or something
probably
like that.
The old summer
and
school.
Mr. Seaman was the professor. I mean, the school teacher there had about four grades in one room, you know. There weren't so many children. Kathleen Norris, you know.
Yeah.
She dates back. And you see, well, Mill Valley was most fascinating in those days. The Dowd Stable and the meeting the 5:15 and the 7:45 in the morning and the horses and the buggies and the mountain railroad track cutting right across, you know. Then they had the little local train that ran up to Lee Street, you know. And that was, it just went up to Lee Street. And Ross and White always called it the local Anzeiger because we lived in Germany for 7 years, you see. And it was the name of a paper there called a local Anzeiger in Munich. So he just fascinated him. And so when this little train was always called the Mill Valley Local, Ross and said, oh, well, of course, that's the local Anzeiger. So the children growing up, my sister children, never knew it as anything else, they say. Aunt Lucy said, we want to ride on the local Anzeiger. Dawson always had such a kind of a sense of humor, you know. That ran for a good many years. And whenever those black paces and I drove it, I told you, I think I mentioned, they always reared up those wonderful black paces. Oh, and I think Mill Valley, and then Blithedale was so fascinating, you know. Blithedale was... Dr. Cushing, I think, was the one who opened up Blithedale. And you know Mrs. James Jenkins?
No.
She lived here for many years. And her father, or her grandfather, was Dr. Cushing. Sidney Cushing, her father. They lived right down there in Blithedale. And it was a summer hotel. And it had the main Blithedale Hotel, and we all went to the summer hops. In fact, that's where I met Ralston White, was when we went down to one of the summer hops, and I met him there. And every Saturday night, but we always drove back and forth in horse and buggy. You know, we had to hitch up the horse, and the horses had to stand tied to the tree while we went in and danced for a couple of hours and then came home, you know. Everything was horse and buggy. And Mr. Cushing I think they owned Blithedale, most of it. And that was the famous Blithedale Hotel.
Where was the Kenilworth Hotel?
Oh, that was on this side. Bastia
was it in Blackdale too?
No, no. That was it. Was in the Mill Valley Canyon.
I see.
Kenilworth Inn. It was just really, you know, where Larry Sims lives.
Mm-hmm.
Right below that, on the, on in the Mill Valley Canyon, below level. Mm-hmm. It's on the floor. It was called the. Is that called now Throckmorton? I guess it is.
Throckmorton or Cascade?
Yes, I think it's Throckmorton up to a point, and then it's Cascade.
Yeah.
Well, Kenilworth was right about at the end of Throckmorton before you got as far as Cascade. And it was a fine old inn, Kenilworth Inn.
And what was the third one you mentioned?
Woodside Inn. That was near Blithedale, down in this West Blithedale Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very nice hotel, but it wasn't on the scale of Blithedale proper and Kenilworth. But anyway, it was a nice inn, Woodside Inn. Those were the only three hotels. And they all sent their buses down to meet the 5:15. And, oh my, those were such fascinating days. Mill Valley was, I think, just a marvelous place then. So adorable in every way, the trees and the people, and they all knew each other. And the old mill, you know. Everybody loved the old mill. And then, of course, the school up there, because it's all changed now. And,
but it's still a charming place.
Oh, yes, it really is. It's a lovely place, but a very changed place. But I do think we can be very proud of our new library. But I have, Miss, I pass my driver's license without glasses, and I do everything.
Isn't that astounding?
And, you know, the test driver... Last time I took my test, I really got a kick out of this, which was only given to you for a year now. So last May I got it. It's good till next May. He took me out and he said, "I see nothing wrong with your driving, Mrs. Bowie. It's only your age." Oh, well. Couldn't get around the age, you know.
That's only young 81 now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, I feel pretty good still,
For the tape, will you tell me where and when you were born so that we'll have it?
Oh, I was born in San Francisco. My father and mother were San Franciscans. And my father, of course, was born in Austria, but he came over here as a child, very young, grew up in Philadelphia. And he and my mother were married, lived in San Francisco, had seven children, and all seven children were born in San Francisco, all of us, on Washington Street. Near Venice Avenue, and my sister and I are twins. We were born May 13th, 1888.
And what year were you married to Ralston White?
1910.
In 1910.
Yes, April 6, 1910.
Mm-hmm.
And I was married to Dr. Bowie April 3rd, 1955, but I was a widow, you see.
Yeah.
I was nearly 11 years. That was interesting. I climbed through the Alps, you know. I went over in summer, being very fond of climbing and everything like that. And I joined a group led by a Russian marquis, and he took a group of 10 people through the Alps. And incidentally, I might say that I and a 16-year-old girl were the only two women that made the 10 passes. There were quite a few other women, but they took the mail buses around the passes instead of going over them, you know. And my brother, now passed away, he wrote me. He said, "Ruthie," he said, "why don't you come back a little early? I had invited my nephew to go over, and he had to get back to school anyway. He was only 14. And my brother wrote me, he said, "Ruthie, why don't you come back a little earlier and join the homeopathic medical congress, the World Congress of Homeopathy in Rio Janeiro. It meets in Rio Janeiro." He said, "You can fly from New York. It's a three-week congress, and... we'd love to have you come back and join us." He said, my sister was going and everything. So I thought, well, why not? I had to bring my nephew home to school, to high school anyway. So I really only shortened my trip by about 2 weeks. I came back to New York, flew to Rio Janeiro. There I met him.
And there was Dr. Bowie.
Yeah. It's really awfully funny because we stayed at the Gloria Hotel, and about the first night, there were a lot of doctors there, you know, and homeopathic doctors. A lot of them I knew, of course, any amount of them I didn't know. But when this doctor was talking, we were talking there, and he looked up and he said, "Why, here comes Dr. Bowie from Colorado. You must meet him." It was Rob walking towards this sort of group where we were talking, you know, and I thought to myself, well, he is rather jaunty.
I thought it was kind of, but he didn't pay much attention to me down there. I hardly knew he knew him. He knew me, but we had all a fine time. But the only indication he gave, even the remotest interest, is when he said goodbye to me. He said, "Goodbye, Mrs. White." He said, "Will you write to me?" And I thought, myself, "Well, this is so sudden." I said, "Well, I'll be happy to send you a California Christmas card." But he started writing a little before the Christmas card. So then he came out in January, and we were married in April.
This is a tape with a sequel. Interview with Mrs. Bowie at the Garden of Allah ends at that point. But about a year later, on October 31st, 1970, we visited Dr. and Mrs. Bowie again, who by then had moved to an apartment in the Tamalpais in Greenbrae, a beautiful apartment house for retired persons. And at that time, Mrs. Bowie read two letters of great interest to us, and we are reproducing them on the fourth side of this tape. The first of these letters is one that Ralston White wrote from Munich in 1936 to Catherine Simmons in Mill Valley, in which he recalls memories of early Mill Valley, and later Catherine Simmons gave the letter back to Mrs. Bowie. It is a very interesting letter, and in particular, having talked to Joseph Thompson, it explains the cook shack where he used to go to get pieces of pie, and it also gives the exact location of the place where, as a young boy, he used to swim in Blithedale Canyon. The second letter was written after the death of Ralston White. It was from William Nostrand, a very close friend of the Whites, who also built one of the outstanding homes in Mill Valley. As Ralston built his home at the top of Blithedale Canyon and had it designed by one of the Bay Area's famous architects, Willis Polk, Mr. Nostrand built his home on the west side of Middle Ridge, not far below the famous double bow knot of the old mountain railroad. The home, which makes liberal use of native Mount Tamalpais stone, was designed by Bernard Maybeck. Mrs. Bowie's reading of these two letters and some of our conversation that October afternoon is reproduced on the fourth side of this tape.
This is the letter. Munich, January 24th, 1936. This is Carl Simons, Mill Valley, California. Dear Catherine, Ruth read me your very interesting letter. Evans wrote me, I was thinking she wrote Rawson. Ruth read me your very interesting letter, and we were glad to hear such good tidings from home. I note that you are collecting historical facts about early Mill Valley, and I will be glad to contribute whatever impressions I can glean from my recollections of those times. Unfortunately, I have no pictures available and no written records that might add luster to the light of other days. That's in quotation marks. I have been keeping track of this movement as occasionally commented on in the Mill Valley Record. I'm afraid that anything regarding early Mill Valley that I may be able to supply has perhaps already been furnished you by some of my fellow old-timers, Jack Burt, the Thompson family, and so forth. But I will do my best to ransack my memory's storehouse and give you a brief outline of my own impressions and scattered facts about those bygone days. So here goes. In the 1880s, an Englishman named Throckmorton owned the 14,000 acres lying between the summit of Mount Tamalpais on the north, Manzanita and Tennessee Valley on the south, Cordemadera Creek and Richardson Bay on the east, and the Pacific Ocean on the west. These lands were for the most part rented to dairymen. A certain Mr. Severance was the superintendent of all this large property and had his headquarters in what is now Homestead Valley. Here he was murdered one day by his Chinese cook just after he had collected the rents. After this, Jacob Gardner became the superintendent. Mr. Throckmorton had borrowed about $100,000 on this property from the San Francisco Savings Union Bank. Among the officers and directors of this bank were Albert Miller, Thomas McGee, Joseph Eastland, and Lovell White, Thrawson's father, for whom some of our streets were named, as you know. These men became interested in the subdivision possibilities of Throckmorton Ranch, and a settlement was reached whereby the loan was paid off, Throckmorton given an equity in cash, and the title to most of the tired lands along the bayshore frontage of the ranch. The company thus acquiring the property was named the Tamalpais Land and Water Company. This company then put surveyors and engineers in the field, the first of whom was named Short, in quotation marks, who in turn was succeeded by the late M. M. O'Shaughnessy, whom I have often heard my father refer to as that brilliant young Irishman, and whose future career fully justified that appellation. The rancher was then cut up for sale into smaller ranches of some 300 to 600 acres each, and a town site was laid out where Mill Valley now is, and an accompanying map filed for record, known as Tamalpais Land and Water Company Map Number 2, later resurveyed as Map 5. Is this interesting to you?
Mm-hmm.
The North Shore Railroad built a spur to this town site, and by 1890 everything was ready for the great auction sale that should give birth to our future metropolis, then christened and now known as Mill Valley. The first train was run into Mill Valley by conductor Jack Brady, a famous character of those early days, who was universally liked and highly esteemed by the traveling public, and who was a pal of all the Mill Valley kids of the gay 90s. I believe the engineer of the first train was the late Charles Stocker, also a well-known personality of that epoch and later. The auction sale was duly held in May 1890 under the persuasive salesmanship of Phineas Ferguson, a celebrated auctioneer of that day. A great crowd of people attended the auction, and considerable property was disposed of. Most purchases were made along Cortamadera and Old Mill Creeks, as it was considered that Mill Valley would never be anything but a summer outing place. And the lots along the streams were shady and cool in summer and afforded swimming and fishing. It was not until about 5 years later that the people began to realize that Mill Valley was destined to become an all-year-round residence community. In its map five subdivision, the Tamalpais Land and Water Company had reserved to the public two tracts of land designated as Cascade Reservation and Old Mill Park. These parks were later donated to the town when it was incorporated about 1901. The Summit School was built at an early date at its present site on the lot, also contributed by the Tamalpais Land and Water Company. The lot on which the Old Mill School now stands was originally subdivided but reserved by the Tamalpais Land and Water Company until after some few houses had been built thereon. It was finally purchased for school purposes in 1907 through the efforts and leadership of a public spirited citizen. Prior to the establishment of the Old Mill School, the lot was largely used as a baseball field by the Babe Ruths of that day. Going back to the next few years, right after the auction of May 1890, the late Louis L. Janes was then made resident manager of Tamalpais Land and Water Company Affairs. Jacob Gardner continued as ranch superintendent and road builder, and one E. Steele was the real estate agent. The latter was a high-pressure salesman of the most modern type, and when all the canyon property had been sold, he began to talk the people into buying lots on the hillside where they would find sunshine and cool breezes. His eloquence was effective, and he literally talked the people out of the woods, in quotation marks. On the Cascade side, houses sprang up along Throckmorton Avenue and Cascade Drive and in Corte Madera Canyon, the stream was lined with the summer dwellings of the pioneer families Billings, Bridge, Harold, Marcus, Hayes, Costigan, and so forth. Lovell White built the first hillside home on McGee Avenue in 1891, which was named The Arches. In 1896, Mr. D.H. Bibb, on a trip of exploration, found a building site to his liking in the wilds of Upper Corte Madera Canyon, and for his pioneer work in settling in this distant locality, the company constructed Upper Corte Madera Avenue to his property and accorded him certain water rights and other concessions as part of his purchase. Up to 1905, no one thought of settling so far up the mountainside as Upper Summit Avenue, by where you live now, but about the time of the great San Francisco fire in April 1906, there was a rush to buy the choice building sites at this commanding altitude, and led by Miss Alice Eastwood and the Rosenquists and the Hamiltons and Harkers, the district soon became a cluster of sunny homes and well-kept gardens. I need not go into further details regarding the old pioneer families of the 90s, as many of them or their descendants still own their old family homes and are well known to the chroniclers of Mill Valley history. I may add, however, the following few personal impressions that I return of those early days. First, Jacob Gardner's house at Locust Avenue looks exactly as it did over 40 years ago, it being about the first house in Mill Valley. Second, Homestead Valley, with only a ranch house at the lower end, was a wilderness. This is the last page. Was a wilderness where we used to go quail shooting and deer hunting. Third, the site of our new city hall was originally occupied by the Cook House, quotation marks, a whitewashed building where under the spreading oaks the early surveyors and road builders ate their meals and pitched their tents. Fourth, the canvasback ducks used to light on the ponds where the Tamalpais High School baseball field now is. Fifth, what is now Tamalpais Park was a dense forest of alders, willows, maples, bay trees, and wild lilacs. We used to go blackberrying down there on a summer day while thousands of songbirds filled the air with their music. The situation was originally called the Willows and later Mill Wood. Six, at that time, before the water was taken out in large volume for domestic use, the creeks had a very large flow in them, and there were lots of places where the kids could go swimming, and the fishing was good at all times. Seven, in Cascade Canyon, the Cascades and the Three Wells, with their large volumes of water, were real showplaces of the 90s. On the Corte Madera side, there was the Big Dam, about where Lee Street is now, in size about 60 by 80 feet and about 6 feet deep, and a fine swimming place for the early inhabitants. Also the Little Dam, about where King Street is, which was shallower, but served as a swimming pool for the Blithedale children. Eight, the center of social activity was the Blithedale Hotel, where dances were held every Saturday evening. On the Cascade side was the Monte Vista Hotel, later the Kenilworth Inn, also a center for social gatherings. Then he has a line here and says, I could perhaps conjure up many other reminiscences could I talk to you personally, but I rather imagine that with the wealth of information that you have available from other old-timers, anything further I might offer just now would be redundant. I will say, though, that if I can be of any service in affording information on any specific point, I'll be glad to do what I can, and especially after I return home, I may be able to find old records among the Tamalpais Land and Water Company effects that will throw further light on the dim and distant past. With all kind regards from us both to yourself and Carl, and wishing you both a very happy and prosperous New Year, sincerely yours, Wilson. Right. This is the letter that I say I've received many, many wonderful letters after Ralston died, as you can well believe. But so many of them were very beautiful, and their wonderful expression of sympathy for me, which was deeply appreciated. But this letter I cherish because it was 90% all about Ralston, you know, so that's what meant so much to me. This is Bill Nelson's letter. Dear Ruth, this is a very belated note, but be assured it is not due to lack of thoughts of you. Ada and I want you to know how deeply we feel for you in this dark hour, and what a tremendous loss to us was Ralston's passing. Time and again we have said Ralston's was the best company we knew of, and what pleasure it afforded us to be with him. In years gone by, he often stopped in for a chat, and never a time but he left us greatly stimulated, and with the restoration of faith in human nature through his presence. As you know, I have had many transactions with him over a long period of time, and in every instance, he leaned over backward to be fair to the other party, the essence of integrity. I would rather have had his word for a thing than the written contract with others. We will never forget his timely sense of humor, his spontaneous laughter, his gift of expression, his zest for life, his true philosophy, his thoughtfulness and kindness, nor his daily practice of a livable religion, the golden rule. This is a time for you to count your blessings, Ruth, and what a host of them you have, happy memories. There cannot be a moment of the day but what brings to mind some happy event, camaraderie. We have always thought of you and Ralston as an ideal couple, an outstanding example for all others to imitate, and so many more, Ruth, that we know of, and then the many more that you alone know. To me, the greatest tribute that can be paid to man is to say the world has been better for his having lived in it, and applied to Ralston, this is far too mild a statement. To us who knew him, something irreplaceable has gone from this world and will never be quite so bright again. With sincere sympathy. Really lovely letter, isn't it?